Welcome to the month six investable ETO briefing. And the briefing we're presenting today covers the trading period from the 1st of June to the 30th of June. As the briefing document explains, exchange traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations are bills issued under contract for assets, goods and services, or goods and services rather that are supplied to investment quality companies are credit-insured invoices from investment-grade insurers. What this means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another. Typically, as you know, these tend to be large companies or banks that are household names, and they owe money to their smaller micro to medium-sized suppliers. We call those micro to medium-sized supplier businesses originators because they originate the debt obligation, debt obligation transactions that create the ETR that are traded on the exchange. So the ETR is evidence of the large company's liability to pay the smaller one, and credit exchange buys these ETR at a nominal discount to their face value. And by so doing, when the ETR is settled or paid in full, the difference between the face value that is settled and the discounted price that it was originally purchased at creates a margin. And it is that margin that creates the yield or return to investors. So credit exchange provides a lot of different types of what we call credit facilities to other types of transactions, such as trade finance, asset finance, and others. Essentially, they all work on the same principles that the traded ETR is a business transaction. The exchange provides the liquidity and is paid a commission for doing so, pretty much in the same way a bank charges interest on a loan. At the end of June, Credit Exchange held RSA of 17.36 million. And this has been a fairly consistent level since June of last year and certainly since January of this year. As you all know, RSA stands for Revolving Sale Agreement, and a Revolving Sale Agreement, or RSA, is a document or contract between the micro to medium-sized business, or the originator, and Credit Exchange. So the Revolving Sale Agreement is a commitment by the originator to sell a certain value of ETR to the exchange in any given period. Typically, it's a year. So, for example, let's say an originator needs a revolving credit facility of $250,000 to run their business. They come to the exchange, much like they would go to a bank. They apply for that credit facility, and if we agree to offer it to them, we would offer them the $250,000 typically on a revolving basis, let's say every 60 days. Then they're agreeing to sell to us $250,000 worth of ETR every 60 days, and therefore the revolving sale agreement, or RSA, will be for $1.5 million worth of ETR over a 12-month period. So this commitment to sell $1.5 million of ETR annually to the exchange is documented in that RSA contract with the exchange. As stated, at the end of June, Credit Exchange held 17.36 million of these RSA contracts as at the 30th of June. Active RSA contracts continue to remain short, as they have done for almost a year now, where our trading patterns, the speed of settlement, and the shortening of the cash-to-cash life cycles increase with the ever-present use of things like letters of credits, or LCs, and more commodity shipping transactions occur in our business. So trade finance in its purest form, i.e. finance that supports commodity trades and finished goods and the shipping-related transactions that move those, continues to be a core activity on the trade desk. In May, I mentioned the significant increase in leasable assets during 2020 and having purchased 6 ships in May and looking to purchase several more, we would be significantly increasing the asset side of the business as our shipping market develops. There are 2 other vessels being progressed as I speak. One is a chemical tanker that operates the Black Sea and the Mediterranean, and the other is a specialist towing vessel being used by the National Petroleum Construction Companies, or the NPCC, in Dubai, Abu Dhabi, as part of a national infrastructure project. As you'll see towards the end of this briefing, the leasable market is reopening to capitalize on this type of opportunity that we're seeing in specifically in the area of trade and shipping projects like this. Also, as explained last month, we continue to look at the car leasing market both in Ireland and in the UK, and we expect before the summer is out to have done initial trials in those markets, and I'll bring you more news on that at our next briefing. These assets underpin our primary focus, being that of trade finance. And on that, just for those of you who aren't clear what trade finance actually is, it is the financial product or products, in our case ETR, that are used by companies to facilitate international trade between companies in different countries. In March, I spoke of the Baltic Index as the index for shipping and how it would break 3,000 of this year. This did happen in May. It dipped below the level of 3,000 in early June, but has remained above the 3,000 mark since June 14 and was trading at 3,166 earlier today. Regarding the future freight agreements or FFA markets, to say they've been uneasy or volatile is an understatement. In June alone, on the Panamax 4TC that we monitor, I've seen rates of 18,000 and 36,000 within a couple of weeks of each other. So continuing up and downs from April and May on the Brazil and China route, what this means is that there's a doubling in optimism in these derivative financial futures that predict cargo transport prices ahead of time, and they too are another strong indicator of trade flow in general. As per prior briefings, volumes continue to rise and continue to indicate strong short-term growth. And as we saw from Allied Research, the Allied Research comments last month, they still see this market as being underpriced. Although I personally can't say I'd agree, May saw a 70-year record-breaking level in the container market, only to have them broken again in June. It seems if you're in the shipping containers and own your own ship prior to January of this year, you're probably salivating at the rates you're receiving, which is all good and well for the shipping companies and indeed for us as we fund and support these transactions. I might add that our funding neither profits nor loses from a boom or bust in the container market. We may have some cross-contamination in other businesses we finance, but we have no direct connection to the container or box ship market. And even if we did, it still wouldn't impact the trades we're doing because we're not currently speculating on container prices or indeed box ships themselves. Anyhow, when you look at the impact this trade-specific bull market is having on the world economy and indeed the local economy, it seems to be quite a big black bull that may have appeared suddenly, but it seems to be steady and confident in its stride. I did talk about inflation for the last few briefings and why that's a concern in terms of prices and local market impact. So to take that discussion, I had recently with a very large furniture importer, probably one of the biggest in the British Isles, if as an Irish person I'm allowed to call it that. There's an impact here where the current shipping bull market is having on his business. So, for example, one of his product lines is garden furniture, and a complete set of garden furniture is around the 3,000 mark at retail. So he can fit 15 garden sets in each container that up until March of this year shipped for, let's say, around 1,500. He tells me that for next year, he's now been quoted 15,000 for the same container load. Even worse, if he tries to outplay the market or play the waiting game with the market to see if the demand drops and therefore prices with it, they're telling him that he's going to have to pay a late booking fee that means his containers could be 20,000 to move each one. So at an eye-watering 10 times increase to 15,000, Simple Math says that the increased cost of each individual garden set is a whopping 30% increase. So it's a bad, bad time to be a consumer in this particular context, or a buyer of commodities, be it lumber, timber, cement, whatever you're in construction, but a great time to be in the supply chain business, or well, a specific section of it anyway. So without clapping ourselves on the back, given the poor start to our year, looking more like 216 than 221, it's fortunate to have done as we have. Fortunate to be early to that market as we were, and fortunate, or perhaps prudent, that we held our line, as I call it, and waited for what we believed was inevitable. And of course, here we are today. So we're looking okay, recovered from Q1 and making Q2 completely clouded out. And before leaving shipping, you would have heard that legendary names like Michael Burry, The Big Short, and George Soros, the man who broke the Bank of England, have both entered that the shipping market. They clearly know their stuff and know how to play or read a market. But in June, we saw the US household name investor Fidelity take holdings in Genco, Starbulk, Golden Ocean Group, Safe Bulkers, Eagle Bulk, you name it. So this is surely another positive sign for the market. Fidelity is an iconic US investment firm. They're known for their buy and hold strategy. And again, remember, this market was on its knees in January of this year. So if firms like Fidelity have been watching this market as they would do for years before they made this decision, and regardless of their strategy, they're a welcome indicator to round out our view that this market has indeed got legs for the short and even to the medium term. And I say medium term for the first time because there's other shoots sprouting in the market that as a whole has been in the doldrums for 12 years or more. So returning to the briefing, it states that there was 44.46 million fully allocated. And this is another major jump of more than 20% in a single month. In April, we had allocated roughly 24 million. In May, it jumped to 36. And now in June, it's over 44. And that's an overall rise of more than 80% trading in 3 months. So we are as thankful for that as we are fortunate. And what this fully allocated figure means is the exchange held more than 44 million worth of ETR as at the 30th of June. And this means that we're roughly 44.5 million worth of investors' funds in the market on the last day of June. And if you add that number to the 17.36 million of RSA, or evolving sale agreements, that represents the future orders we have in our books that we have not yet filled, it totals almost 62 million. And this is another good boost of almost 17%. In other words, in June, we had another 50% to the growth we experienced in May. So things are good. And let's keep it going it that way. Moving to the next figure, June's briefing showed that the investors redeemed 410,000, and this would be consistent with prior years regarding withdrawals in the particular month. The ratio of money in versus out in June was another strong performer and was also above the norm of 2-1, where more funds come into the exchange than leave. In June, that ratio remained as it was in May at a ratio of 5-1, meaning that for every euro that left the exchange, 5 came in. As you know, these investors' funds are a mixture of private companies using ETR as a safe haven for their cash and an even split of pension funds in the form of ARF, PRB and PRSAs and private investors' savings in cash. And the current economic and social crisis continues to remain good for investable ETR with continued liquidity and stability in our market as we head into the second half of the year. This brings the focus of the briefing to the ETR average duration figure of 87 days. And apologies I can see that this number is correct in the body of the briefing document, but it's wrong in the summary graphic in the top right of the document. That's my fault, so we'll correct that and upload it after this call. Anyway, at 87 days, as you know, we call this number the credit index. It's the ETR average duration or number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. Overall, since the end of last year and or early January of this year, this number seemed to be holding steady at 90, around the 90 mark. From there, it did spike in February, March up to 121, but it's back down to, as you can see, 87. But it's still off the exchange's average credit index of 75 days. And we're seeing what we're seeing is a definite resistance to moving back to 75 over the last 6-9 months. So the credit index is the cash to cash cycle from the day an ETR is issued and purchased in cash and the number of days it takes for the debt to be extinguished or settled and the cash returned. So at 87, it's going in the right direction, but it's still almost 20% higher than it should be at the average of 75. So credit index is an economic indicator of our market, the one that we're trading, in other words, and it seems to be getting back to business as usual. Looking at June's briefing, there's then the trading result of 14.52 million in June. And this is another medium to good result for the year. It's on par with the same results from June of last year. At this point in the year, quarter one was quarter one and long gone. This briefing is about June, and we continue to trade well and are making up for lost ground. Year on year, when considering year to date, June 2021 is almost 15% ahead of the figures for June 2020, but we're still a way off the target that we set at the start of the year. Below that is the month's trading figure. Below the month's trading figure of 14.52 is the treasury performance of 9.68 million. This means that we spent slightly more than 14 million and we collected 10. If you look at how this cycle moves and consider the credit index of, call it 90 days, trade and treasury should be aligned every month where treasury is settling each year trades at an equal value to the amount the trade desk is buying them. And if the exchange wasn't growing as it is or wasn't buying chunky assets as it continues to do, then this would be true. However, as we are growing and buying expensive assets, we're only seeing trade desk, I should say. We only see trade desk and treasury match each other every, say, 3 months. So that's a good sign and a positive sign, too. As always, trade desk and treasury continue to monitor this trade balance of funds in versus funds out to ensure it remains stable and within the control parameters set down in the credit risk policy. That's the policy that governs the risk and the general exchange trading policies. Moving to the center of the document, this is where we list the 10 largest investable ETR holdings and the top 10 rated holdings. These two lists show that companies or organizations owe the exchange, these two lists show what companies or organizations owed the exchange the largest amounts of money as at the 30th of June. And as usual, you can see the HSE continues to hold their slot as they've done for more than a year now. We can also see the repeated appearance of Atradius and Vodafone and Cork County Council. Good to see Pfizer has returned. And I can't remember when I last saw Pepsi on the list, but good to see them. And I see PRM also remains for a third consecutive month. Moving to the top 10 rated investable ETR on the right side, Pfizer tops the list, as they should, with their investment grade rating. And then there's the regular appearance of MediaMath, Paramount, 21, and others. These are the highest rated debtors, and apart from Pfizer, as none of them were investment grade or IG, they don't have an investment grade rating on the 30th of June. So the remainder of the list shows a random selection of organizations, regardless of the amount of their liability, and is simply a selection of the most creditworthy. Moving to the pie chart below these two sets of lists continues to demonstrate a significant change in the typically well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. The HSE in Ireland and the NHS in the UK, along with the others in the health and community, remain stable, albeit slightly higher for June at almost 17%. Since quarter two of last year, this pie chart has had a repeated heavy exposure to wholesale and retail. As per prior statements throughout the last year or more's briefings, this is more wholesale and food retail based. As you may well know, organizations like Tesco, Musgraves and others make regular appearances in our top 10 largest holdings. So looking at the wholesale trade, this continues to perform well and has remained between 35 and 40% for the past 12 months now. So moving to food and beverage, they held steady at around 7%. And the business and services sector was slightly down 1% at 8.78, whilst the manufacturing sector is up 1% at almost 9.5%. Construction in March, April was 7%, went to 12% in May, and June saw it return to a healthy 14% plus. So apart from these, there was no other significant changes. The pie chart still continues to reference the EU NACE categorization system, and the adoption of our own credit classification is a component part of the new credit machine software. This is due for release in H2 of this year and was supposed to go into live production testing on the 1st of July. Today's the 28th and data imports are still inching forward. So more on that as the adoption continues. Returning to the actual performance of the exchange in June 2020 versus 2021, you can see a repeat of last year's numbers in terms of trading values and volumes too. Overall, and as I stated earlier, year on year, we're up 15% at the end of the month. And also, as stated earlier, the total amount of investor withdrawals was 0.41 million. I also discussed the index at 87. And to finish on our performance in June, the largest single trade was a trade finance deal of 1.23 million. As explained in the investment brochure and also at other briefings, the average value of an ETR is around 2,000 euro, but we have traded where the ETR value has been less than a euro. And as you can see here, last month, the largest one was 1.23 million. This is another one of the same interesting trades I mentioned last month. This trade uses a combination of extensive shipping market knowledge and future freight agreements or FFA contracts, whereby our originator is able to book cargo for some of the world's largest commodity traders and move it at prices the commodity trader's own in-house shipping departments can't compete with. At the risk of repeating what I explained last month, in the world of shipping, it is very difficult to fix a ship any more than 6 or 8 weeks ahead of time, and to be able to do it so at a competitive rate. So this means that commodity trade contracts can't be closed. Hence the reason why these large commodity trading houses have their own shipping departments. However, even the largest of them and the best of them struggle to compete against the highly sophisticated freight specialists in the market. So working together with Credit Exchange, these brokers and specialists are able to extend their market reach and take on more business from, as I stated earlier, some of the world's largest commodity traders. As we get more familiar with this market, and also at the same time as we complete the full rollout of our credit trading machine, we should be able to systematically trade with our originator partners in ways that few of any other finance provider could. So we can moan about the IT guys and their delays and the data and all this sort of stuff, but we're still slowly laying the foundations for a good solid future there. Finally, let's move to the trend section of the briefing, where you can see that the investor's yield or buy price during May started at 2.084 and ended just below 2.095. With the negative yield of 1% on bank deposits, the investors are getting yield that is now over 3% better than by buying exchange-traded receivables, on-demand cash equivalent offered by credit exchange only. As you will know, this rate changes daily, and you can check that on the Investable website. Back in April, we pushed the yield to more than 2% as part of a drive to bring more funds into the exchange. We can see that May and June have been good, so we're leaving that rate where it is for now, and we'll review it each month. In addition, we're reopening the leasable market on Saturday, the 1st of August. And that you'll all be waiting at your computers for that, or more correctly, you'll probably be enjoying the long weekend. But so you're aware, the leasable rate will open at 4%. So it'll be available for next week, from next week, I should say. And the money, as before, is locked for 3 years. It can be redeemed without penalty until further notice. But if it's redeemed before term, the investor does lose their yield, exactly as when this product was last in the market. On that note, and as before, the intermediary commission is spot 750. And let's see how it performs for the rest of quarter three to September 30. So Andrew has been asked to ensure he contacts all our intermediaries to ensure that they are aware that the investable is holding at 2 and that leasable is open at 4. And to end the briefing, you can see a piece of the active RSA of 17 spot 36. And that concludes the briefing for the month of June. Thank you very much.